be the rest of that. Sometime in the next several days, when I get to it, the whole reading list from tonight will be up on our website. So if there is anything that you want to check out for yourself, that will all be up there. That's nakedgirlsreadingnyc.com, by the way. You probably know that because you're here. So there is more espionage to come, and a very special guest will be joining us in the second half. But first, we have a very special treat. So we here at Naked Girls Reading New York City are actually just one chapter, appropriately, of an international organization. I just found out today that there is a chapter in Cape Town, and there's we have some in Australia now, too. I mean, literally, all over the country, all over the world. Our headquarters is in Chicago, and every year, the folks in Chicago present the Literary Honors, which is an award to, as they put it, a gut-level author for an exceptional new work. And in 2013, the fifth annual Literary Honors Award went to a Brooklyn author, go figure, because we're awesome, Bradley Spinelli, for his novel, yeah. Killing Mr. Spinelli's here tonight. And we'd like to share a selection of...
So Italian.
Right? All right, I feel good about that. I'm Sicilian. from the website of the book. After moving to New York in 1999, Benson, a reflexively cynical 20-something, and his girlfriend look for work while exploring the hipster playground emerging in North Brooklyn. Rumors of suicides spread, and people start to kill themselves in alarming numbers. Hangings, jumpers, death by L-train, friends follow strangers. As the bug spreads to Manhattan, Benson assembles a grassroots crew to help clean up the city, half-deserted and riddled with corpses. So here with Bradley Spinelli's Literary Honors winning Killing Williamsburg, Gal Friday. My good lord. I kind of want to crack my hip.
Go ahead.
Do it. No judgments.
Do it. Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Crack some other stuff for fun.
Come for the compliments. Love. Everyone wants to fall in love. The search for the wild ride, the unending quest for the unexpected. You want to fall, you want to be taken aback by a moment that catches you unawares. An extra wink from someone pouring coffee, an unsolicited compliment that leads to a date, a seduction, an intrigue, a gravitational force that pulls you in and makes mincemeat out of you. You want to fall in love and be swept off your feet. You want someone to come along who has a plan, an agenda that will save you from indecisiveness and plot out the rest of your life. With no effort on your part. Someone who will slow dance with you to the muzak in the elevator, squeezing your ass playfully and smiling at you in infinity in the parallel mirrors. You want to be teased. You want to be led along by a warm and caring hand. You want to be free and trustful enough to explore all your kinkiest sexual fantasies without fear of retribution, without recurring traumatic memories, without the cops finding you raped and killed and handcuffed to the elevator, to the radiator, naked and covered with bodily fluids, which will never even amount to a DNA match. You'll want to be safe. You want to be respected and adored and placed high on a pedestal by a devotee worthy of worshiping you. You want your parents to be proud of you. You want to go out for expensive dinners and never worrying about having to pay, but be reckless and flippant and order oysters and lobster and overpriced bottles of wine and cocktails that boggle the imagination in their consummate beauty, multi-layered and fine crystal. But you don't want to have to explain yourself. You don't want to be blamed for your mistakes or mistrusted for your inconsistency of character. You think your contradictions make you interesting, complex, fascinating in a world populated by bland character actors forever typecast. You want to believe that you are the only one left living who is really special, truly unique, a gem amongst polished rocks, an exploding supernova in an endless sea of slow-burning stars. You need someone else to recognize it and validate your belief. You don't want to hear excuses or talk about money or feel jealous about the existence of other lovers or be the object of jealousy. You need reassurance. You know the world is a dirty place, but your own little corner is immaculate. Your friends are the coolest, the most fun, the most intellectual conversationalists since the golden age. deserve better. You deserve fame, fortune, and the undying admiration of this world of blank-faced dreamers. You want the best. You want to be safe. You want to fall in love and fall and fall and keep falling, never reaching the bottom, never having to recover, never on the rebound, never on the outs, never in reality, but merely sculpting your perceptions to convince you that all this shit in the toilet when you rise to flush was somehow magically deposited by someone else while you were turning on the tap to start your hot, sanctifying shower. No one really believes they're ordinary. Well, no normal person anyway. I just want to fall in love. Spreading. As cynical as I may be, the Talia incident scared the shit out of me. I met Talia a couple of weeks ago. I was at Swift on 4th near Bowery with Phil and some of his NYU cronies, berating the hell out of him for going to see the new Richard Foreman show without me. But I still want to see the show, and now I gotta get a date and deal with all that. Here's your date right here, Phil said, gesturing to Talia at the bar. She grabbed her and brought her into the convo. Friday night okay for you kids? I'll call and make a reservation. Talia was a cute, short brunette, weighing maybe a buck, another doctoral candidate at NYU. But she seemed different, calling herself a writer, not just a deconstructionist critic like the rest of the kids. I went with it and took her number, more to humor Phil than anything else. In the middle of the day, Talia called me to see what I was doing that night, even though our official date was a week away. I agreed to meet her at Smalls in the West Village to hear some music. The music was all right, if not great. Well, somewhat clouded by the bass player's humming along to his own melodies and that grating, groaning sound pressing through a distorted face. I half expected him to squeeze out a baby right there on the stage. Talia and I ducked into the corner of Kettle of Fish to have a cocktail. And she told me about the guy she was sort of dating with some bizarre medical condition that makes his nuts swell up like a grapefruit. He's out of town, they're taking a little break from each other. I'm still wondering what was on her mind as far as I was concerned, and I asked her flat out. Well, I don't have many friends, and I thought you were cool, and I wanted to go out and have a drink, and I thought you'd be a cool person to go out and have a drink with. You have got to be crazy if you think you can hang out with me and not have me come on to you. I was afraid you were going to say something like, it's a good thing you just want to be friends because I'm not interested anyway. Well, we both have a good flirty laugh, and I started to like her. We left the bar and I gave her a ride on her bike, standing on the pedals as she giggled uncontrollably, perched on the seat gripping my ribs, both of us laughing as I weaved through traffic. Her apartment was gorgeous. Right on top of Union Square and the Zeckendorf Towers, a complex of buildings topped with lit-up pyramids. We were there to go to the roof and get high, but she had a king-size bed, and when I saw it, I took a running leap, diving right to the lush field of feathery comfort. She snuggled right up next to me, and we started kissing. I kissed her some more and started pulling her clothes off, wriggling them. She was wriggling out of them as fast as she could. Hold up a minute, girl, I said. We don't need to be in such a hurry. I'll only be at work for an hour or so, and I can come back and we can do it right. I'd like a quick one now if it's all right with you. I was mostly naked with a boner, so I figured, what the hell? A week after our spontaneous first date, we took in Bad Boy Nietzsche, the new Richard Foreman show. It was good, according to this book. Talia was dead quiet, and afterwards she said she was just going home. I let her go about halfway up the block 2nd Avenue before I ran after her. Hey, I don't mean to be a prick or anything, but I gotta say, this is totally rude. We had plans to go out tonight. I asked if anything was bothering you. You got nothing to say, and now you just walk away. You can't even come out for a drink, no explanation. You don't think that's rude? She didn't. It was impressive. After a brief argument on the street, barking at each other as if we were actually dating, she suddenly flipped her attitude 180 degrees and smiled. We went up to the roof, smoked a quick bowl. The view was stunning. Standing underneath a glowing pyramid seen so often from the ground, peering down into Union Square and uptown, to the Empire State, and that towering genius of chrome, the Chrysler Building. Oh, I wanted to maul her right there on the roof. We moved to the bed, and the more we got into it, the more ridiculous I felt. As if it were all part of a scene she was writing, a fantasy that she controlled, and yet it was as if I was the only willing participant. She was controlling all the moves, but didn't even want to be there. When I got inside of her, I asked, "What do you want?" "I want you to come." What is the rush with these early 20s broads? "I'm just getting started here. I want to ride until 4 in the morning. I want to make you come a dozen times before I even considering it. I want us to satisfy each other completely. I had already made the concession since she refused to either give or, and this is way too much, receive oral sex. And now I'm supposed to come quickly and get it over with?" The more I tried to get her into it, the more she resisted me. I felt distant and removed. I finally said, "If you want to control the entire experience, you should just get a vibrator." "You're right," she said. "We should stop." Oh, like hell. I refused to relent, attacked her with a voracious animal urge, letting her lie as still as she wanted, pulling my soul from my body and throwing it all into her, whether she deserved it or not. When she went to the bathroom, I lay still on the bed sideways, my head dangling over, feeling spent and dizzy and ready to pass out. But I thought, when she gets back in here, she's going to ask me to leave. So I should just ditch right now and be done with it. I was almost dressed when she came in with the towel wrapped around her and she sat on the bed. "I guess I'm a bit of a masochist and a bit of a sadist," she said as way of explanation. "I just want you to know that I sometimes find pleasure in things that other people wouldn't necessarily consider fun. And I had a good time tonight, even with everything. I had a really good time. But you never asked if I had a good time. And I didn't." The next 3 seconds lasted a lifetime. It was my exit line. I was out of there. I was gone. I never wanted to see her again. I couldn't deal with her. I said the words, "And I didn't," and turned towards the door. And I saw it all out of the corner of my eye. She slipped a hand underneath her and pulled out a large kitchen knife. A 9-inch blade shaped like an upright sail, and in one quick, deft, repulsively committed motion, the knife flipped itself in the hand to face her, and she plunged it to her throat with a sickly, wet thunk. The force of it pushed back and pushed her off balance, her head striking the backboard of the bed with the tip of the knife protruding from the back of her neck, making a slight nails-on-chalkboard sound as it scraped the wooden veneer as she slid. The blood flowed thick, soaking the coke-white sheets and pillowcases behind her, trickling delicately down her elegant neck, collecting in tide pools in the hollows of her exquisite collarbone, painting her smooth brown body crimson on a field of white, as it choked and sputtered, slower, slower. I looked at her legs and the soft bit of mystery that had so recently held me. I felt like a necrophiliac already. There was so much blood. I dialed the all-too familiar number and cleaned out the weed drawer, stash, pipes, before taking a walk. To get to the street, I had to take the elevator to the 7th floor, then walk to the other side of the building to catch another elevator to the ground. I walked the stale industrial carpet and saw the EMS guy in white with a gurney and a body bag. What's up? I would never admit to being in that room. "Oh, that's a good one," the man closest to me said, with a dry, icy cynicism. He looked as if he hadn't slept ever. The guy pushing the gurney attempted to smile but couldn't even bring it all the way to the surface. Another suicide, man. What else? He said it with the sadness of routine. The gurney rattled on behind me, and I made the elevator before the door closed and pushed the button for the lobby. When the polished stainless steel door closed in front of me, I saw my own haggard reflection, and it dawned on me, slowly, like a hangover. I was in Manhattan. It was spreading.